Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are continuing our series called Life in the Heights. This is, for those of you keeping score at home, Life in the Heights, Part 6. Last week we spoke a bit about the history of our community, Erov, and why it is that there are some who are less into the community, Erov, than we in Mount Sinai are. But I'd like to talk about this week is what happens in the event that the Erev is down, or what happens if someone brings items to you from outside the Erev, or what happens if you are carrying outside the Erev and you notice that you have tissues or keys or something in your pocket. What should you do in those situations? So these are things that we will discuss. Sounds like a plan?
Yes.
Sounds like a plan. Excellent. It happens that the 1 week since I've been the rabbi here, that the Erev was down. Only one time.
A snowstorm.
Ain mol, there's a snowstorm. And the snowstorm happened to be on Parshas Zohar, I believe it was 6 years ago. Now, in terms of rabbinic angst and disaster zones that you could be into, Parshas Zohar is a week that, like, everyone wants to come to shul to hear the Torah reading. Like, and the Erev is down. And now what? So this was difficult. It happens, like, we worked very hard. We set up extra readings of Zohar at different times so that people could come, and right, we tried to work everything out. We knew in advance that the Erev would be down, hence this document that you see in front of us is a document I sent out to the community for that Shabbos when the Erev was down. Just one more point, then I'll take your question. At that Friday, when we're announcing the Erev is down, so someone from a certain other shul down the street calls me up and says, Rabbi Schwartz, you know why the Erev is down? I'm like,
because of the snow.
There's a snowstorm, right? It's like, no. It's the yard site of Moshe Feinstein. Okay.
Whatever works for you.
Oh, my God.
I thought it was the snow. Maybe. Right? Maybe. Like, yeah, we don't know exactly. It snowed many times and the Erev wasn't down, so maybe. But, I mean, it was something, actually, that, you know, maybe I'm a little too heebie-jeebie, but I got frightened by that when I heard it for a minute. In other words, like, you know, this fellow, who's obviously not coming with my worldview, is saying that the Erev is down because we're disagreeing with Rav Moshe Feinstein's talk about not having an Erev in Manhattan. And I really believe in the Erev, my Rebbeim believe in the Erev, I think it's a great thing. But you know what, for that brief, fleeting moment, I did, you know, it hit me.
Not when the Sefer Torah was dropped?
Right, so that's the way I told last week, right, about that maybe the Sefer Torah dropped because of the Erev. I don't know, that did not scare me at all. This scared me. I don't know why. Again, it's in part because, like, they got me at a low emotional time. Like, when the Erev is down, rabbis are, like, really nervous. And the guy's like, oh, my gosh. But, okay, that's the whole story. Let me take a question, then we'll learn.
That's triumphalism.
I think we spelled with a T.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
right. And no, you're right. And, like, obviously, I'm not agreeing with this guy. I'm just saying that, like, for a fleeting moment, it hit me. Yeah.
Two things. One point, isn't this, like what we've been discussing the past 2 weeks in the Gemara here, where it's kind of superstition?
What do you mean?
meaning, he's saying it's due to the years that Rabbi Feinstein. He's superstitious that.
Again, I don't know if this would be the Isser superstition per se. One thing I would say is, and I think this is the answer to, whenever people try to make a simin min hashamayim for something, our general approach is ki lo machshivoy sai machshivoy seichem velo darcheichem dirachoy niyum hashem. We don't understand how God works.
Okay.
Right? Now, again, there is a whole, God says my way of thinking isn't your way of thinking, and we generally don't take events from the real world and use them in terms of saying, oh, obviously this halachic position is correct, not that halachic position. Let me just tell you, I like to quote in this context, let me just say this, I like to quote in this context To my mind, there's a bit of a contradiction in the Tshuvas of the Melamed L'Hoel of Reb David Tzvi Hoffman about whether we take events from the real world and something that happened and say that that should determine our halachic outlook. There's a discussion in the poskim about whether two brothers are allowed to marry two sisters. The Tzava, the last will and testament of Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid, says that two brothers should not marry two sisters. And Reb David Tzvi Hoffman writes in his Tshuvas that there was a great gadol in Germany, Reb Avram Bing. I believe he moved to the States at one point. He was in Baltimore. He was the founding rabbi of Sherith Israel, Rabbi Schwab Shul in Baltimore. Reb Avram Bing was a known gadol in Germany. Reb Avram Bing had two sons who married two sisters. And on the way to the second chasana, the horse that's pulling the entire wedding party with all of the fares and goods and everything, the horse goes a little bit meshuggah and turns over and everything spills on the ground. Everything gets dirty. So
Is anybody hurt?
No. Thank God nobody was hurt. But everything got dirty. So Reb Avram Bing apparently gets up and he says, "Das is a patch from Reb Yehuda HaChosid, let's go and get married." In other words, Reb Yehuda HaChosid is giving him a little slap, "You're disagreeing with me, go get married." Now, I always, that's quoted in the Chelech Evin HaEzer Demlam L'Hayosim in Yotes. I always thought there's a bit of a contradiction, because the Melamed L'Hoel, in a different tshuva, talks about the machlokes between the Taz and the Ramah, about whether you do Havdalah before Neres Chanukah, Neres Chanukah before Havdalah, and he decided that he really wanted to do Neres Chanukah before Havdalah, but he forgot to say Havdalah in his silent Shmona Esrei. And once you don't say the Atachon Antonim, your silent Shmona Esrei, so obviously you can't do Neres Chanukah before Havdalah. So the Melamed L'Hoel writes that this happened, so I realized that maybe I was wrong in my assessment that I should do Chanukah candles before Havdalah, and I looked back into the sugya, and I realized that the proofs I thought I had were wrong, and I went back to do Havdalah before Neres Chanukah. So I always thought that tshuva is going in a different direction of taking the sign that happened as a halachic basis. When I said this over, Rabbi Schneidman said he doesn't think there's a contradiction because he wasn't taking it like as a halachic sign. He was just saying that it forced him to look into the matter again. And Rabbi Schneidman is probably correct. There was other discussions in the poskim about whether you take something as a halachic sign or not. There's a tshuva in the Sridei Eish about a chalitza case. There's a lot to say about this. I actually was once thinking of writing something about this topic, about whether events in the real world influence halacha, but I cut you off, Lev.
Okay, so when I lived in Albany, we had the Arab Dam once a year because we wanted to show.
Yeah, so really I have a theory. My theory is that we should never lie to the community. To say that the Erev is down to educate the community about Erev, I think, is wrong. We should never lie to the community. Let me tell you a story. One year when I was in Israel, getting bechinas for YU, so I'm in a particular yeshiva at night, and they announce that they got credible threats to the security, got credible threats that there might be a terrorist attack, and therefore, the whole yeshiva is under lockdown, and no one's allowed to go out in town. I got scared. I got scared, like, credible terrorist threats. Like, I was supposed to go out that night and, like, meet my sister-in-law in middle of town, like, to go out for dinner. So I walk over to the Rosh Yeshiva, and I say, you know, credible threats. I'm, like, really scared. What's going on over here? So he says, "Oh, it's not for you." What does that mean? It was December 31st at night, going into January, New Year's Eve. They didn't want any of their yeshiva students to be out New Year's Eve. Therefore, they invented a terrorist threat. That, ladies and gentlemen, is awful.
Thank you.
Now, it's really, really bad. I don't believe in lying to communities.
No,
if you want the Eruv to be down 1 week a year, take the scissors and cut it.
And you said we are having the Eruv be down.
But to say that the Eruv is down when it's not really down, it seems to me is wrong.
Because it
completely undermines people's faith in the system.
They did actually take it down.
Huh?
They actually took it down.
That's great.
And they told people that it's down because of...
Mr. Lockerman.
Okay.
If what?
If you actually take down an Arab, isn't that probably liable for all the carrying?
Probably.
Although
we'll talk about that in a few minutes, maybe, if I have time.
The Sefer Torah fell down?
The Sefer Torah, years ago in the show, Sefer Torah fell down, and someone told me it's because I support the Eruv.
Oh,
that's
on.
Why the Torah fell. We don't do these things. Come on. Okay, now, so I put together that one Shabbos when the Eruv was down, I put together these guidelines for what to do when the Eruv is down. You can read it, it's all in English. There's nothing particularly exciting. Basically, what I pointed out in these guidelines is that there's a halacha that even if you're indoors, even if you're in your apartment building, you're not allowed to carry unless you have an Eruv Chatzeros and a Schiris Rishos, which means everyone should go and buy a box of matzah and lift it up on behalf of all the members in their building. If there are Breuer's people in your building, you don't have to do it because they already have one. But if there are no Breuer's people in your building, you gotta go and buy matzah. So suddenly everyone in the community is ready to keep food to buy their matzah. Okay, that happened. I told people also they should try to make a Schiris Rishos. Again, number 5 is about, 1 through 4 is about the Erev. Number 5 is about Schiris Rishos. 6 says that like this will not help you to carry outside of the building. The prohibition to carry applies even to carrying little children. This is a common misconception. People think that you're allowed to carry children on Shabbos because they have this rule in the Gemara in Shabbos Tzadi Dalet, the Chai Nose Esatzmo. Chai Nose Esatzmo basically means that since we derive all the laws of carrying from what they carried in the Mishkan, and in the Mishkan they didn't carry live humans, right? So Chai Nose Esatzmo means that it's not a Torah prohibition. It still is a rabbinic prohibition, and therefore you can't even carry your kids. Now, what do you do in the event? Let's say you have, this comes up with like 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, right? So let's say you take your kid outside on Shabbos, because the kid could walk, right? What's the problem? And suddenly, what happens? Erveint. Right? Erveint is Yiddish for he cries. Erveint und erveint. Right? And, right, this, you've been there many times probably. Right? This is not such... What? On the set. So I've been there. What do you do when the kid sits down in middle of Bennett Avenue? I'm not moving. Right? So one thing that you do... Right? My father likes to talk about how, as a kid, he went with some of his cousins to an amusement park near Montreal. And when his cousin, Sarla the Michigana, that's what she was called, Sarla the Crazy Woman, is taking her son, Yankel of the Michigana, to the amusement park. In the family, that's what they called them. What can you do? And Sarla the Michigana is going on the train, on the streetcar, actually, with Yankel of the Michigana. And Yankel of the Michigana, the little kid, doesn't want to go to the amusement park. So Sarla the Michigana takes her hand, and she starts slapping him. You're going to go! You're going to have a good time! A good time! Let me tell you, you'll have a good time! So this became like a family story. You're going to have a good time, a good time. It's not a good idea. There is what we call child abuse. Don't do it. Right? It's bad. But the basic point is, if the kid sits down in middle of the street, says he's not moving, says she's not moving, so Moshe Feinstein, one of his tshuvas, writes that we allow a double rabbinic prohibition, letzorech hakatan. Now, let's go slowly. The fact that we have an Eruv means that we're assuming that there's no Torah prohibition to carry in Washington Heights. There's no Rishas Harabim in town. There's only a rabbinic prohibition. Next, carrying a child. We just pointed out is a rabbinic prohibition. We usually talk about doing a double rabbinic prohibition, right? In the case of I ask a non-Jew to do something that's rabbinic. We spoke about that a few weeks ago. But the Chazon Ish and many other poskim assume that you could even do a double rabbinic prohibition in the following way. They're both being done by a Jew. So therefore, I'm carrying outside in our community is rabbinic, and I'm carrying a kid, double rabbinic. Now, I can't do a double rabbinic prohibition on its own, but if I'm doing a double rabbinic prohibition to do a mitzvah, or I'm doing a double rabbinic prohibition for a kid, because the kid is having a little fit.
A meltdown.
So that, says Reb Moshe Feinstein, is permitted. You can do a double rabbinic prohibition, right? Letzorech the katan. Not only that, in the tshuvas of Rebben Sion Bilsker, the tshuvas of the Shaarei Tzion, he quotes the famous story of Reb Chaim, that Reb Chaim apparently paskened that this is permitted. Ready? Remember, double rabbinic prohibition is permitted for the sake of a mitzvah. So let's say I'm in shul, I come to shul and I didn't read any emails. I didn't see any of the huge signs. No Erev this week. I come to shul and I have my keys to get into my apartment to have my Shabbos meal. Without my keys, I ain't got no Shabbos meal. Without my keys, I ain't got nothing. Right? So what do I do now? So what we did is Nick. Oi, Nick. The holy Nick. Right? He's not Jewish. That's why. So Nick could carry the keys, because that's a rabbinic prohibition, double rabbinic prohibition for the mitzvah of eating Suda Shabbos. But let's say you don't have a goy. What do you do then? The Chazon Ish writes that what you could do is, ready? I have the keys in the shul now. The shul is a Rishos Hayachid, right? It's enclosed. I can go, says the Chazon Ish, from a Rishos Hayachid to a Rishus Hayochid Derech Karmelis. Remember, the street outside is not a Torah prohibition, it's not a real Rishus Harabim, it's a Karmelis, it's a rabbinic prohibition. So I could go from my shul, which is enclosed, to my house, which is enclosed, and I'm going through a rabbinic area, and that is a double rabbinic prohibition, says the Chazon Ish, because Tosfos points out in Erevin that if you do not stop in the Karmelis, that is a rabbinic prohibition. To go from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaYochid, Derech Rishus HaRabim even. Right? Let's say I have a real Rishus HaRabim in the middle, and I throw something over the Rishus HaRabim into another Rishus HaYochid. So Tosfos says that's a rabbinic prohibition. Similarly, says the Chazon Ish, if I go from my house, or from my shul into my house, and I do not stop at all, so that is called a double rabbinic prohibition. The street is rabbinic, it's a karmelis, and I'm going from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaYochid without stopping. So I told people what they could do, if they're really stuck, is, ready? Take your keys and walk. Make sure you don't stop. Make sure you don't stop. You get to the corner. Let's say there is a red light. Don't stop. What you do is you walk around at the corner. You do a dance, you do a jig, you walk around, you don't stop. When you go Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaYochid Derech Karmelis, Chazon says that's a shvus to shvus, a double rabbinic prohibition, which is permitted al yidei Jew. Now that's obviously not recommended. It's better to have a goy, and it's very difficult not to stop. Try it sometimes.
Say good
Shabbos to you. Right? Someone says, you can't stop. Good Shabbos.
What's the point of not stopping?
Because if I stop, then I violate the rabbinic prohibition of going from a Rishus HaYochid to a Karmelis. And then I did what a rabbinic prohibition on my own. In order for this to work, I have to go from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaYochid through the Karmelis without stopping at all. It has to be analogous to the case of throwing something from one house to another house. When you throw something, it doesn't stop in the middle, besides in the movies, or like in the cartoons. No, like you throw something and it like stops and it looks around.
That's funny.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, Yitzchak.
Yeah, so I've had. In terms of not stopping, there's sometimes where I just wanted to be extra sure that I didn't I was told that something was in the Erev, but just to be extra sure, I wanted to go without stopping, so I've tried it. It's very hard.
It's very hard, yes.
But in terms of that, I've been told two different answers to how to walk away when there's no, what to do if you find out you're carrying around an Erev that are contradictory to each other. One says you should find a makom.
So we'll talk about that in a second.
Sure.
So what happens, let's say I'm walking outside, and then someone tells me, you know, the Erev is down, and I have my keys in my pocket. What do I do? So the best thing to do is to take the keys and, like, backhandedly flip them out of your pocket on top of a fire hydrant. A fire hydrant is halachically a makom patur. Again, there are four different Mishuyos and Chavis, Shusayam, Shusram, Karas, Makom Patur. What you could do is, like, throw your keys on top of a fire hydrant.
So,
might not be the most likely scenario. These are hard.
What do you do after that?
But you stay there, and you watch your keys.
Awesome.
Or you wait until a non-Jew comes by, and you say, Slobodan! Keys! Alright? And Slobodan takes the keys for you. Again, that's what you do. Again, you don't want to be in these situations, but that could happen. Yes? What's
the little green flag? Before your time. When the Erev was up, there was a green flag on the
On the front of the shul.
Remember
they did
that
for a while.
And
yeah.
Green flag, red flag.
They discontinued that.
Yeah, I don't know why.
That's a good idea. Because you can go to Shul Erev Shabbos and then see the green flag.
I don't know why they did that. That actually was before my time. I don't know. Lev.
Doesn't the Mishnah Berurah say that, let's say, you're going from an area that's in the Erev to an area that's out of the air, and you don't know that you have something in your pocket, that you can just keep it in the pocket until you get to the place where you're going and then drop it and leave it there?
Not familiar. I don't know. Yeah, Yitzchak?
So, how can you do a backhand when you're putting it on the floor?
How come you do it? Again, we try to minimize the prohibition as much as possible. How can you do a backhand with a lot of dexterity?
I would say, if you do a backhand, there's a good chance I'll add the rabbi, and then you do an actual serve. If you do a front hand, you can actually get it to the makom patur.
Okay, again, if obviously you want to get on the makom patur, the ideal would be if you could do a backhand, get on the makom patur. So as I'm walking, I take the keys, like this, and then
What does the backhand give you that this care on pocket doesn't?
The backhand, it makes it less of a prohibition.
How?
Because it's called a shinoi. Whenever I do something with a shinoi. Yeah, I could do it with my pinky. Again, these are the types of things that you have to decide on the fly. These are not simple issues. Now, I wrote an article a number of years ago. You see where I have see my article? So I wrote an article that goes through all of these scenarios. I wrote an article in the RGJ Journal, Volume 47, that goes through a bunch of these scenarios about what to do when the Erev is down and the like. We hope that Erev is never down. We really do. And I just try to address some of these issues as best as I possibly can. There are lots of complications in terms of getting stuff into apartments and the like. What we had that Shabbos, which was actually great, is that Nick went around town and he helped people get into their apartments. Nick did a whole, he's like the Pied Piper. And like everyone is following Nick. Now I encouraged people to compensate Nick after Shabbos, obviously. But Nick is just a wonderful guy, and he really took care of everything. Okay, yeah, Yitzchak, last comment, and then we got to do...
The other thing that when I was learning Shabbos, the Magister said, when you're outside, and you find out the case, and you know you haven't stopped since you go in, to turn around and go back to the position so you don't have...
Again, without stopping, you could do that. Sometimes going back doesn't necessarily help, depending on the door situation. It will only help if, it only helps if, what's it called? If you could get into the door without stopping also. If you have to stop to get in.
Well, if there's an Erev in my building, does that count? Does the whole building count?
Yes.
I just need to get through the main door, not the...
correct. Again, these issues are not always so easy to grasp. Let's just talk about one last Erev issue, and then we will break for tonight. What has happened recently in the Heights, and we'll talk about this. By the way, next week I'm not here. I'm going to be in Israel next week, so I'm not here. No Wednesday next year. But the week after, I want to talk about issues. The week after is Purim, so we're not going to have Shir then, thank you. The week after, I want to talk about like some roommate issues. One of the things that's come up recently in the Heights, to a greater extent than it happened beforehand, is that roommates or many community members are residing with people who are not Shomer Shabbos, or not Shomer Kashrus. It's becoming more common. So one of the issues that comes up is, let's say somebody who is not Shomer Shabbos brings food to a meal because this fellow, this young man or young woman, is connected to the Frum community, but they're not keeping Shabbos, and they're bringing food from outside the Eruv. Are you allowed to use that food on Shabbos that they bring? This is a question that has come up many times in the community. Someone who lives outside, someone even, let's say, buys food on Shabbos. Can you use the food in these cases? So that's the last issue I want to discuss with you tonight. There is a halacha, I give you the sources, item that came from outside the Erev. You see on side two. There's a halacha, it appears in the Gemara in Bava Kamma and elsewhere, about mevashel b'Shabbos. If someone cooks on Shabbos, so there is a kenas, the Chachamim imposed a fine that under certain circumstances you cannot benefit from the malacha that was done on Shabbos. If someone did an aveira on Shabbos, the item becomes forbidden. So Shulchan Aruch writes, "Hamavashel b'Shabbos osha osa achas misha'ar melachos." If you cook on Shabbos, you do some other malacha, b'meizid aser lo la'olam. If you do it intentionally, it is always forbidden. La'acherim mutter. In other words, the person who cooks on Shabbos, that item can never be used by that person who cooked. For other people, they can eat it after Shabbos. That's if they did it intentionally. B'shogeg aser bo b'yom gam l'acherim. If he did it, or she did it, unintentionally, so on Shabbos, you cannot get benefit from it. Whether the person who did it, or others, you cannot get benefit from the item. Someone who did a prohibition on Shabbos, the item is forbidden on Shabbos, even if it was done accidentally. Now, people in our community, when they carry on Shabbos, my assumption is that they are b'shogeg. Now, even if they grew up religious, but they're not violating the prohibitions on purpose, in the sense of they know it's forbidden, but they really don't know how forbidden it is. They really don't know that they're going to suffer consequences for what they're doing in the next world. They just never took Judaism that seriously. This is a comment the Chazon Ish has, other poskim have, that in our world, our responsibility is aleinu l'moshcha b'avosas ha'ahava. We have to draw people in with ropes of love. We don't have the concept of someone who's deliberately violating Shabbos anymore. It virtually does not exist in our world. Therefore, whoever is doing it b'shogeg. But b'shogeg, according to the Shulchan Aruch, still you can't benefit from the item on Shabbos itself. However, the Vilna Gaon is quoted here, the Mishnah Berurah in Sifkat in Zayin, right? The Mishnah Berurah begins, Gam la'acherim. The Mishnah Berurah quotes the Vilna Gaon, that the Vilna Gaon says, you know what? B'shogeg, if it was done inadvertently, that you, even that person, can get benefit from the item on Shabbos itself. The Vilna Gaon passes like the other position in Tanoim, it's Machlokes or Meir Rabbi Yehuda. The Vilnagon Paskin is like the other position, that if the Maisa Shabbos was done inadvertently, even on Shabbos, you could benefit from the item. So the case I've had is people bring a bottle of wine from outside the Eruv. According to the Shulchan Aruch, you can't drink the wine on Shabbos, no? That's the simple reading. According to the Vilna Gaon, if it was B'shogeg, which it is, you can. Now the Mishnah Berurah says that if it's necessary, you could rely on the grub. But in our case, it's actually better. It's better because of the Bir Halacha that I give you as the next source. The Bir Halacha quotes from the Chaya Adam, that the Chaya Adam, Rabbi Avram Danzig, the Chaya Adam, if you want to know about him, ask Dashel. So the Chaya Adam writes that the Knas of Maisa Shabbos only applies when there's like a physical change to the item. You see, all malachos on Shabbos, or I should say 38 of the 39 prohibitions of Shabbos, something changes. Right? If I grind, it used to be a big chunk, now it's little particles. If I knead, it used to be water and flour, and now it's dough. Right? The malachos involve a change. But carrying, the only change is location from here to there. That's the only change. If the only change is the location, says the Chaya Adam, it might not be a prohibition of Maisa Shabbos. Maisa Shabbos means the item changed. Over here, the location changed. And therefore, the Chaya Adam suggests, say, look in the Bir Halacha, Kosa B'Chaya Adam, Davka B'Dava Nasa Masa B'Guf HaDavar Shenishtane Kuma Shohaya. This Knasa Maisa Shabbos is only when something changed. Like Mivasho, Ukiyotzibo, like cooking. Ava Motzi Rishus Rishus Shalom Nishtane Adava Mikuma Shohaya In B'Shogeng Mutter Afilo Afilo Bo B'Yom. Right? In other words, by carrying, it's going to be permitted even for that person on the same day, even according to the Shulchan Aruch, that Maisa Shabbos B'Shogeg is Usar. But the Chaya Adam says that does not apply to carrying. Rabbi Yonason Sachs, when I heard a shift from him a number of years ago, point out the Sefer Urzarua, right at the beginning of Masechta Shabbos, points out that the Gemara calls Hotza'a, calls carrying on Shabbos a Malacha Gerua, like a lighter Malacha. The Urzarua explains it's a Malacha Gerua because there's no change. And that seems to be the basis of this Chaya Adam, etc. Between the Chaya Adam's approach and the Gerua's approach, it seems to me that if someone carries an item to you on Shabbos, you can use it.
How about getting a package from UPS?
Getting a package from UPS. So, did the item come from inside the tchum or from outside the tchum? It's hard to know. If the item came from outside the tchum, right, once it's in your apartment, you can technically use it. The larger question with items that come from UPS is it considered muktzah? Because it didn't arrive before Shabbos. It could be that it's not called muktzah. However, it's in a package. How do you get the package opened? So if you have a guy, in most cases you can open the package through the guy if it's something that you really need for Shabbos. It seems to me, though, that we should only permit this if the package could have arrived before Shabbos. Like, you could set your Google Shopping that it will deliver within a range of time. If the delivery is set that it should come on Shabbos, that's called Amir al-Nachri, that's asking the guy to do a malacha for you on Shabbos. So then I think you should not benefit from the package. However, if I have the Google Shopping and it's set that should come between 12 and 6, and Shabbos comes in at 5, and it happens that it comes at 5:48, right? So it could have come earlier. I said to come earlier, right? So in that case, I think it is permitted to get benefit from the Google Shopping item that comes. However, you have to be careful in terms of opening the package, and etc. Those are other shaylos about how you open the package.
You just leave it in your doorstep. You just want to bring it in for safekeeping.
So I think you could kick it in for sure. It's not considered mukta with total mukufa. You could definitely kick it in. That's not a problem. The question, though, is can you use the item that arrived? That's the harder question. That's a further question. Even if you know that Maisa Shabbos is permitted, b'shogeg, but when the goy does something for you on Shabbos, we're more machmir. If I ask a goy to do something for me on Shabbos in a forbidden sort of way, meaning Mr. Google, I'm assuming is goyish because his name is Google, not Yit, right? So Mr. Google, right, I'm asking him to bring something to me on Shabbos that's more likely to be forbidden, right? you have to try to set your deliveries that they should likely arrive Erev Shabbos. You have to speak louder.
How would you say this not practical to kick in? It's too heavy, you have the doorstep that will stop it from going in and kicking.
Something breakable in the
front. Again, in most cases, it's practiced. In most cases, yeah, you just kick it in or something.
But it's like you can't kick it in. You get very heavy. Can you lift it in, move it out to the way?
Easy enough.
Again, tilt. Even if it's muksa, tilt muksa begufa is permitted. And that's all I'm saying. The very big packages that show up, like you decide to buy, you know, a whole Amazon bookstore or something. So, I don't know. Yeah.
What was if you didn't know that they required a signature?
You can't sign the Shabbos.
No, I know. I understand that, but you didn't know that, and you did it in the way that it's perfectly acceptable, but you didn't know that they require a signature.
So again, if something requires a signature and you can't sign, they usually end up bringing it to the post office or something and leaving it there, and it becomes a huge pain because the post office is open like 37 minutes a month, and what can we do?
They're illiterate,
and the line goes out the door. I hate the post office.
Yes,
181st Street is not a great post office. Not so much fun. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming. Have a good night.
Thank you.